Real Money Radio is brought to you today by Holland Financial. Since 1997, David Holland and his team have helped hundreds of investors plan their financial futures. Planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. Come see how simple and clear your future can be when you plan stronger. The consultation is free. Call 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. All right, it is time to talk about get down to business, so to speak. Let me put it that way. It's time to get down to business. What kind of business? We're going to talk about protecting your business. So this is for business owners, but you know what? This also, our topic today will apply to folks that think of starting a business or, you know, if you're an employee of a company, and it could be relevant to you as well. I have on the line with me Scott Burnett, and he's president and CEO of Burnett & Associates. He has a background as a litigating attorney, and we're going to get into some details with him about that. Scott, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, David. Welcome, everybody.
Yes, I'm glad to have you. President and CEO of Burnett & Associates. The website, burnettandassociates.com, B-U-R-N-E-T-T, and associates.com, burnettandassociates.com. Okay, Scott, so let's get back up, give the background, because I love the, it's very interesting that you have kind of quote unquote argued both sides of the situation here. So Scott's an attorney, and give us a little bit of the background of how you got to where you are today.
Well, you might say I was a little bit of a late bloomer, David. I went to law school in my late 20s, primarily because I was toiling away and not making a lot of progress, which I thought I was entitled to in my life. But I got into law school, did very well. Got out in private practice, worked for the DA's office, and I've done a lot of litigation, and I really kind of found my home. I like to think I'm a natural teacher, so being in litigation is a good place to argue in front of a jury.
Well, that makes sense. And so you did that, and you did that for a number of years, and then part of what you were doing, if I understood correctly, is you were doing a lot of work in the business corporate arena. So explain to the listeners, Scott, what you did in terms of representing your clients.
Well, a lot of times people form corporations and LLCs, and they're not necessarily very familiar with the responsibilities that came with them. So what I was doing in private practice is I represented the plaintiffs who had a problem with a business owner. And then I would sue that business owner, whether they were a corporation, an LLC, and my primary goal was to pierce their corporate veil and kind of take away the liability protection that these people thought they had, and then hold them personally liable. By doing that, it kind of gave me a little bit of leverage in negotiations and settlements. So that's what I used to do.
So you could get, so not only could you, in pursuing the claim, the compensation or whatever the case may have been for your client against the business, also though, going after the business owner or owners, their assets by arguing or stripping away, as you said, that corporate veil, removing that legal barrier between the liabilities of the company coming back to the business owner himself.
Right, because when you sue a corporation or an LLC, the law says that the only thing that's available is the assets of the company. But if you don't act like a corporation, if you don't act like an LLC, and the little things that we'll probably talk about in this call, is the problem is that you're not going to be treated like a corporation and an LLC. And I was very good back in the day at exploiting that weakness in business owners.
All right. And now you
now
you're on the other side.
Yeah, I've got a lot of bad karma I've got to work off. I don't know if that's even possible for a lawyer, but
That's a great question. You got me. Well, that's a whole nother show, Scott.
Yeah.
But so then now you help businesses and folks that want to start a business or existing business to make sure they've got their act together and can keep that veil where it should be, protecting the business owner.
That's absolutely right. You could say my business has come around completely. I'm a business educator. I believe that education is the key that unlocks the door for business owners. And so what we try to do in our business now is help people understand what's the best type of entity for formation, what the responsibilities that come with it, and a lot of tax education, because I feel like most of us are probably a little bit lacking in the education department when it comes to business taxes.
I think you're probably right. If you're just joining us, Scott Burnett is our guest today, president and CEO of Burnett & Associates. the website, burnettandassociates.com. We'll grab a quick break and we'll dig into some of the details about those LLCs, S-Corps, C-Corps, and the like. Stay right there.
What if in the time it takes to eat lunch, you could potentially strengthen your financial future? Would you invest 1 hour to plan stronger? If you spend just 1 hour with certified financial planner David Holland, you'll get simple, straightforward advice to help you plan stronger. And if you already have a financial plan, isn't it worth an hour to get a second opinion? There is no cost or obligation to meet with David. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com for more information.
And we're back. We've got Scott Burnett on the line. We're talking about business, protecting your business. And the thing we wanted to get to is Scott is because of his experience working as a trial attorney and going after business owners for his clients. And now he is helping business owners protect themselves from the next Scott who is coming after them, making sure you've got your stuff set up right and that you're running your business correctly from a legal standpoint. And just as a basic thing, I know that you get this question a lot, Scott, is what type of business entity should I have? Should it be, should I run it as a sole proprietor? Should I run it as an LLC? Do I use a C corp, an S corp? There's different types of businesses, obviously, that lend themselves to certain ones. So let's just start right there. Maybe a general idea, again, this is all about, a lot of this is about protecting that corporate liability from coming back to the owner. What would you suggest from the basic standpoint on that?
Well, it's a big question, and it's an important one for a lot of business owners. So let's start with some easy steps. Let's say, whether you should leave being a sole proprietor and move into a corporation or an LLC. Well, you should probably stay as a sole proprietor if you're not really working it as a business. Maybe you're a network marketer and you're working maybe part-time and you're not making very much money. Then, being a sole proprietor and taking advantage of all the business-related tax benefits that all business owners get, whether they're sole proprietor or corporation, would probably be best. But if you're part-time and you're making a lot of money, well, then, or you're making more than what you thought you might be making, and you're concerned about some of the liability that's related to what you're doing, then now you're in a position where you should be looking at whether you should leave that and join this other club, the club on the other side of the curtain here, which is our corporation or our LLC.
I got you. Okay, so if they decide to make that transition, then the question then becomes which one is right, and I know there's a lot that goes into that, but can you, give us a little bit of a narrowing of some of the choices here? Is there something, for example, that would speak to you, Scott, that says you definitely should be a regular C corporation for somebody's situation?
Well, corporations and LLCs now have really sort of morphed into being kind of considered the same. So, from a liability standpoint. And I'm talking about liability protection. If you're a business owner and you form a corporation or an LLC, if there's an attack against the company, your personal assets are safe.
Okay.
So either or, from a liability standpoint, they're identical.
Okay, that makes sense.
Where they start to kind of break apart a little bit, David, is when you're kind of talking about them from a tax perspective. So it's kind of a three-part answer here, and I know that's not always great for radio.
No, that's okay.
But corporations and LLCs are a little bit different. LLCs have a little bit more flexibility. So an LLC can be taxed if it has one owner, like a sole proprietor. If it has a couple of owners, it could be taxed like a partnership. Or in either option, it could be taxed like a C corporation or an S corporation. So the choice really comes down to fact patterns, which makes the most sense. So if we go back to C corporations and S corporations, kind of breaking down what they are, how you become one, I think might be helpful for the listeners.
Sure.
Just in terms of understanding the differences.
Yeah, I agree. Let's do that. So C corporation, you've got the business is really separate from the business owner from a tax standpoint, right?
Right. So C corporations are considered separate taxpayers. They have their own tax brackets, just like you and I. Except theirs are a little bit better sometimes. 0 to $50,000 is taxed at 15%. So it all comes down to income. If you have a lot of excess income, it may be a question of that might be a better choice. S corporations are formed as pass-through. So if you form a corporation it's always going to, when it's formed, default to being a C corporation.
Okay.
And you have to choose. You got to make an election. You have to file a form with the IRS.
The S election.
Right, the S election, the 2553. And you then are asking the IRS, please don't tax me as a C corp, tax me as an S, and all the profits and the losses I want to come to me. Now, it sounds sometimes when you first look at this like C's the better choice, but it really is a fact pattern specific thing. And we can go through some recommendations, but does that make sense so far?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So when we look at this, you know, C corporations have separate tax brackets, S corporations are pass-through. So why would you be one or the other? Well, because S corporations are pass-through, usually in startup businesses, you may have some losses. So you put money in, you invest in some marketing, some advertising, you make a little money, but at the end of the day, you have a loss. Well, you'd want that loss for yourself, so a C corporation, you wouldn't get it, and on an S corporation, that would pass through to you on your 1040. So that would be nice. But more importantly, it really is going to come down to the type of activity you're engaged in.
Okay.
So, for example, I sit on the executive board for the Association of Network Marketing Professionals. So many clients that I have are network marketers, and they're considered service businesses. They sell products, but it's not like they have an inventory that they sell off their shelves. They buy it from a distributor and resell it through their downline.
Right.
Well, those people are considered service industry, and as a result, they want to be taxed as an S corporation. Because if you're involved in a service like lawyers, accountants, architects, or people that are providing, let's say, consulting, which is what a network marketer really is, and sales, then they want, if you're a C corporation, you're going to be taxed at a higher rate. You're going to have, instead of a graduated tax, you're going to have a flat tax of 35%. So the choice between C and S kind of comes down to what is the type of business you're engaged in, how much income you're going to project for yourself, and then how do you want to take that money? Because you got a lot of choices here. And a lot of this is where I feel like in the company that we're doing now and we're trying to help business owners, we're a little bit different than these sort of online companies where you have to kind of know all that stuff before you go in.
Yeah.
You know, really, this is not a cookie-cutter business, although it's kind of morphed into that recently because of the Internet.
Yeah.
It's really sort of fact-specific. You need to know a little bit of information to make a good recommendation.
Well, and you gave a great example, Scott, about the personal service corporation, the flat tax at 35%. A lot of people wouldn't even know that, and I use an S election because, you know, being a financial planner, you know,
right.
I'm right there in the middle of that. But, the other thing that people need to, you know, that they may not be aware of, which of course why many people do make the S election, even if they might, the other way might seem like it's the right way to start, is the taxation, you know, at both the corporate level and to the shareholder for how you arrive at getting your dividends out of a regular corporation. And so the S lets you kind of, quote-unquote, avoid that double taxation.
Right. If people seem, you know, they see that about double taxation, they don't understand it. If you're a C and you take profit out, you're going to be taxed on it when you receive it, but the company can't write that off.
Right.
It's on an expense or a deduction.
Yes,
so it's
dividends.
Taxed just like it's there, so two levels of tax. And S corporations, as you know, have a lot of opportunities for distributions and payroll reduction, so you can avoid paying self-employment tax on that income, provided the percentages are accurate and fair.
And you take reasonable compensation for W-2, right?
Right. But it's funny, and David, I know you've experienced this in your discussions. I can't tell you how many people that I have talked to that make what they thought was a great, well-educated decision, only to find out later that it wasn't. And these are people that have CPAs who just, you know, I think that's one of the illusions about business today is that the CPA is the business advisor.
Right.
Business advisors are not your CPAs. CPAs are doing an accounting of the information you give them. And very rarely do they tell you they should do something this way or that way. That's really not their role.
Yeah, I know exactly where you're coming from on that, Scott. And I think that people need to avail themselves of as much, quote unquote, referring back to what you said, as much education as possible. And also make sure you're getting good advice about this stuff because it is it can be complicated, but it can also be risky. And as Scott has done in his career, working attorneys that do pierce that corporate veil. And thankfully, we have people like Scott to help people avoid the landmines. BurnettandAssociates.com is the website. Scott, we'll grab a quick break. We'll be right back.
Do you know how to get the most from Social Security? Don't let a simple mistake prevent you from receiving all the benefits you've earned. David Holland recently showed a retiring couple how they could get an extra $84,000 in Social Security benefits over their expected lifetime. Wow! Don't leave your money on the table. Call Holland Financial today for your one-on-one appointment. David can do a free analysis for you and show you the optimal age to start drawing Social Security and filing techniques to maximize your benefits. There is no cost or obligation. Call 671-PLAN or visit PlanStronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we're back with Scott Burnett, attorney, business consultant, advisor, and we're talking about ways to protect your corporation, but also choosing the right kind of corporate formation. And you know what? We had talked before, Scott, about getting this right from the first time, because when you go to change it down the road, if you didn't set it up correctly and then you find out later, well, you know what, I should have done this versus that, not only can it, cost a lot just getting the right kind of maybe advice, but it could be tax consequences and it could be messy. So you've got to be careful with that and get it right the first time. Talk to us a little bit about, one of the things that we talked about was that, again, piercing that corporate veil. Corporations not adequately or business owners not adequately operating their business as a business. Talk to me about some of the things that business owners absolutely need to be doing to maintain that corporate shield, how you handle the money or how you handle your documents and just the legality part of operating the business.
Well, when people form corporations and LLCs, what they really need to understand is, and this is sort of an adage that my mom used to use all the time with me, to whom much is given, much is expected. You see, you've gotten this new club you joined, and it has a set of rules. Now, they're not letting anybody in this club. I mean, sole proprietors don't have liability protection and tax benefits like corporations and LLCs do. So when you join this club, they're giving you all these extra benefits. But they're now expecting you to act like a corporation and an LLC. And the problem sometimes is that people don't understand that even though there may be, let's say, one person, you're the owner, you're the person who runs the company, that the formalities of a corporation still apply to you. They just think that, well, I'll make all the decisions, and I don't have to have meetings, and I don't have to do all this stuff. But the reality is this. Corporations and LLCs are considered separate people. They have their own name. They have their own tax ID. They have their own bank account. They even have their own birthday, the date that they are born. And as a result, when you form one, the money goes into its bank account and it belongs to it. It's not your money any longer. So when you access things through it, you got to ask your company for permission. And that is what we're talking about. Compliance and record keeping is asking your company for permission. And those are resolutions, David.
There you go. So you need to maintain those. They can't be, because I'm sure you've seen this, Scott, that the business owner has that original starter kit that goes on the shelf.
Right.
And it never gets opened again. I mean, they've got to get that out. We need at least an annual meeting of the shareholders of the corporation to conduct
right.
its affairs.
Yeah, you have this sort of minimum expectation, which is your annual meeting. But truth be told, there's a lot of decisions that the company's making. It's deciding to give you a distribution. The company's entering into a lease. Maybe it's buying a piece of equipment. Well, again, you're doing that with its money. Now, you're making the decision for it, but it's not your money that you're using. You're using its money. So what happens is either the manager in an LLC or the director for the corporation is making that decision. And what business owners are not doing is they're not recording that and putting it in the record book. So, David, here's the best news. Look, I have been doing this for a long time, and I've worked with well-heeled clients and startups, and the story is always the same. You just didn't know you had to do it. But if you think about it, nothing changes with record keeping. You're going to make all the decisions for the company, and every time you ask your company for permission, what do you think it's going to say?
It's going to give it.
It's always going to give it to
yeah.
you. So record keeping is nothing more than the sort of the completion of your thought process. So the board of directors decides to give you a distribution or a dividend. That's great. Sign the resolution. It goes inside the record book. But the formality of it is important, and that's one of the things that we do as part of our service with our new corporations. We give that as a free service, and then we do it for existing companies. And, David, for your listeners, we'll even do that for anybody who's out there listening and would like that service for free. I'll give it to them for free for an entire year.
Wow.
Just to teach you how to do it right.
Very nice. Thank you, Scott. We appreciate that. That's outstanding, and because I think a lot of people do not know that there are things that you have to do to maintain that. And I can already tell that that's one of the easiest ways that in your prior work, you showed that it wasn't being treated like a separate entity, a separate person under the law. It was really the personal, almost like the personal checkbook for the owner.
Right. And it's funny is that, you know, the story that I'll relay to people is that, you know, you have this bylaws and this operating agreement, and the client usually signs those, right? They have to sign them. They're in the startup kit. And then they get into a deposition or trial, and they'll say, you know, I'll ask them, well, why didn't you do your record keeping? And they'll say, I didn't know. And then I cross-examine them on their record book, and I impeach them with their bylaws. I impeach them with their operating agreement. So is this your record book? Are these your bylaws? Is that your signature? Now, you testified earlier that you didn't know you were supposed to do it, but that's not true. Isn't that this your signature that you said you knew and you would follow these rules? Because every set of bylaws says you have to do this.
Yeah.
Every operating agreement says you do it. So not only is it just a terrible fact pattern, but when a trial lawyer comes after you, he's going to impeach you, and he's going to impeach you with your own words, your own signature. So you can't come in and say you didn't know, because, in fact, you did know. You signed the document that said you would do it.
I knew, but I didn't do anything about it. That's
right.
That's really the truth.
And then think about that. So when you're testifying and you say you didn't know, I'm going to, you know, I play a little game with you. I'll say, well, when you testified earlier and you said you didn't know, that wasn't true. That was a,
Yeah.
And I make them say it.
Yeah.
So really, you know, this stuff is, it's not very complicated. Truly, it isn't. But it is important. And if you do it, you got nothing to worry about. If you don't do it, then really, you're not really a corporation or an LLC. You're more like a de facto sole proprietor. And that's the last thing you want to be when you go to court.
Because that opens up everything.
Yeah. I mean, as a sole proprietor, you have nothing. But a sole proprietor doesn't have to do resolution. So that was the trade-off. So you get all these benefits, this great opportunity. And on the other hand, you've got this document thing that you have to write down. Well, we're not talking about a ton. This is not something that's going to slow you down. It's your decision. You just have to write them down and record them. And heck, if you don't even want to do that, I'll do them for you for free.
That's very generous, Scott. Thank you. And I think one of the other questions that people would ask here, and so I'll do it for them, is how specific do they need to be when they're documenting these different activities or distributions or whatever the case may be? Is it for each individual thing, or is it broad policy, or how specific?
Well, it has its fine point. So one thing we want to clarify is bookkeeping and record keeping are two different topics. Business owners have a tendency to homogenize and blend them together. Bookkeeping is what you do when you keep receipts and invoices, your QuickBooks, that sort of stuff. So record keeping is something separate. It's the permission slip that goes before you spend the money. Bookkeeping is proof you spent the money. Record keeping is the thing that happens before that. And there's like four requirements that I like to see in every resolution. There's the preamble, the person who's making the decision, whether it's a board of directors meeting, a shareholder meeting, or member or manager meeting. Then you have the action. Number two is the action. You know, what are you doing, buying a car, giving a dividend? You know, number three is the why, and this is where the rubber meets the road. Why is the company doing this? So if it's buying a car, why this car? Right? The why is really the glue that holds this together, and a lot of times people just omit that completely. And then finally, you sign it. And you date it if it's contemporaneous, and if it's not, you discuss in the preamble on or about. But that's really what you're looking for, those four points in almost all resolutions.
Very good. Very good. Good stuff, Scott. Scott Burnett, ladies and gentlemen, has been our guest today, President and CEO of Burnett & Associates, burnettandassociates.com, Burnett & Associates, burnettandassociates.com. Scott, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing with our guests, our listeners today, and we'll have you back.
David, I appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
All right. Thank you so much.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.